All right, welcome to another episode of Work in Programming. I'm Matthew Weeks, and I'm here today with Reggie. I'm sorry, I don't have J.R.
Ranchin. Everyone messes that up. It's all good.
All right. So, yeah, we were just chatting before this about how we met. So I guess we could start from there. Like, you were the co-founder of a company called Food Shooter, where I kind of worked for like a month or two.
Right.
With you guys as a as an Android developer kind of intern for a little bit. Do you want to like maybe, and we can just get back into what we were talking about before. But
sure, yeah. So this is a startup that I did with one of my best friends in 2012. So I actually left school to do the startup. And I think, Matt, you joined in 2014 or 2013. Yeah. I'm not quite sure.
Summer 2014, but I'm not
sure. Yeah, and at the time, I remember the first day that you came, we actually brought you to some event and there was a guy there asking about, you know, how long we've been doing this. And when he came to, he's like, it's actually my first day. And he's like, oh, and like that exchange was really hilarious and quite awkward, but you know, it was, I still remember that. And I remember how, you know, I was trying to explain how the backend works and all this stuff. And you're a bit confused at the time. And I felt like we could have done a better job explaining some of the stuff. And, you know, we were still new at the time. We didn't even know what we were doing. You know, we were learning.
I remember my first day, you handed me a USB key with the Android. Yeah. And I was just like, oh, this is cool.
Yeah, we weren't even using any version control or anything like that. So that goes to show how amateur we were at the time when we started. And keep in mind, too, at the time when we started, none of us had actual programming experience either. So we were all learning on the fly. Like none of us went to school for this except for one of the other co-founders who was doing the iOS app.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I hope, you know, during the time that you spent with us, it was somewhat useful. I don't know. I mean, I mean, was it useful?
Like I was saying earlier, I think it like, it forced me to realize like you can just kind of get started on something.
Right.
And, you know, it ended up not being quite the right match just because it was like a commute and it ended up being like, you know, you needed to work and make money for the summer or whatever, for the year. But during that time, like I picked up a few things. I got more confident with doing some Android development, I guess. And like, it was bootstrap, I guess, you know?
It wasn't really
a full-fledged, because we didn't really work together for very long either. Like it just didn't really make sense in the end.
Yeah.
But, you know, as a result, I kind of like, I feel like what it taught me was like, you just need to get started, you know, like if you can go to a hackathon and put something together and that's your POC.
Right, right.
You can do the same thing and then turn that into a company, like, which is what you guys did.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of interesting. So from there, I actually kind of left that, joined the, I forget the name now, but the Young Entrepreneurs program that they have for Ontario, and then basically just got like a little grant to try and start my own company. And it got me into freelancing, which was good, you know? In terms of like, yeah, I think that's, it's, you know, and it was a nice experience to like kind of see, because, you know, you don't really have much access to the startup ecosystem unless you're a part of either a startup or you're just, you know, you're always out there.
And right, right.
In Toronto at the time, it was growing, but it was pretty small, you know?
Yeah, like now it's different. It's completely different. Like there's startups everywhere. But at the time when we were doing it, there were very few. And the startup culture was starting to take foot, but yeah.
Yeah, like so, if you went to like a Hacker Nest or something like that at that time, you wouldn't be seeing, like right now you see all sorts of startups and like there's tons of tiny sponsors and things like that.
Right.
But like when you used to do it, it would be like just computer science students. Like there's there's no like big players in the game, I guess, at the time. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty cool to experience that. But like I'm curious like how you guys actually made that leap. Like you left school. So were you studying computer science before that?
Or? No, I wasn't. I was actually doing biophysics. So it had nothing to do with computer science whatsoever. But at the time that I was doing biophysics, I felt really lost at school. Yeah. Like I wasn't really enjoying the stuff that I was learning. And when you're not really enjoying what you're learning, you're not going to do well, right? Oh. You're not going to put in the effort. You're not going to put in the enthusiasm or the time to learn the stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you pay so much money to go and do it.
Exactly. Right. And you know, it's kind of crazy because I left and I more so joined the startup out of desperation, to be honest. It was like, okay, you know what? If there's anything that I can do with my life, this is it. And this is my only option. So Even that kind of became my motivation for even learning how to code. I didn't learn to code because I wanted to. It was just turned out to be, okay, well, turns out this is the only thing that I can only do right now to get to the next level. So that's how that happened. But when I started learning how to code, I actually enjoyed it. And it's kind of strange. It's like, I never thought that I'd end up coding, but it turns out, you know, I was meant for this all along. It's just crazy. I don't know. I feel like everything happens for a reason. So yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, like 100%. I've always found that, like, I took kind of leaps in you know, taking certain opportunities or like going out on my own. And like, whenever I did that sort of thing, I mean, I think the first thing I ever built that was like pretty, like, I felt like it was meaningful.
Right.
That I really loved. Like, I felt so passionate about it. I built this little app, and like, we went to like Mexico for a week, right? Mm-hmm. And I skipped my midterms. Don't tell my mom. for like two of my classes. One of them I had almost 100% in, so I basically just flew through it anyway.
Right, right.
And the other one was for physics, and I still never completed that credit. it was maybe not the greatest, I guess, educationally, you know? Mm. But I ended up going there, and you know, we built an entire company in a month. And the product ended up being like pretty successful. And I felt like I learned so much. Like, I taught myself React because, you know, we needed to do it for the job, right? It wasn't like,
exactly.
You know, I find that like, if you're building something that you actually give a shit about, that's when you like learn the most versus if you're just trying to, you know, so I did computer science, like, you know, I did learn a lot. I learned a lot of fundamentals that are still useful today. And you know, there are certain concepts that I picked up, but the majority of the job you learn when out of necessity, like you said.
Yeah. And the weird thing is, you know, there's this idea that you still need to get a degree or whatnot to get some sort of accreditation in order to be in the tech field. And I feel like that idea is dying, right? There's all these resources online nowadays, right? You know, you can learn stuff from websites like Code School or YouTube, right? There's tons of resources out there. And, you know, I feel like that mentality of, okay, well, you know, right after you finish high school, you got to go to university, get a degree, and then get a job.
Yeah.
I feel like that whole mentality is dying out.
Oh, right? It's just it doesn't make sense. Like, it used to, because it gave you access, right? Like, you graduate a school and potentially, so for instance, I did co-op through university.
Mm-hmm.
I went and actually got the job myself by applying to like a role and then getting it and then going back to my school and saying, oh, hey, I know I'm not in the program anymore, but could I do this co-op?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, a lot of the students, you know, like, they got connections to like IBM. A few people went to like Google for internships, and you don't really necessarily get that access all the time.
Right.
But I still feel like you can actually springboard yourself into jobs like that without a degree. You just need to, you know, do the work ahead of time. Like, if you spend 4 years at a university and you spend 2 years working, like, 2 years working is going to be like significantly more valuable experience.
Oh, 100%. Like, when the employer looks at that, or whoever's trying to hire you, they're going to look at the experience, and that will trump the education that you had, right? And that continues going forward to any other job that you apply for, right? They're going to look at the last thing you did. They're not going to care about which school you went to or what degree you have. At that
your
point,
GPA,
right?
Comes, you're applying for your first senior job, and then they're asking you about your university.
Like, that will never be the case, right? And like, again, like, I'm not going to say university is useless. It's definitely useful for a lot of things. Like you said, you learned a lot of the foundational stuff when you went to school, right?
Yeah.
But, and you know, that kind of,
you start university young.
Sorry, say that again.
I think the other thing is, like, you start university, like, if you typically you're starting university, computer science, whatever, you're doing it pretty young.
Right.
So at that age, I think it's, you know, you're a little bit less mature. So for me, at least, I think I grew up a lot.
Right. Right.
During university. And it was like, it forced me into learning coding and all that. But I think there's a lot of people, a lot more people nowadays that get into it from different areas.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's changed now, especially like in 2020, I feel like a lot more. Like, we get resumes all the time at my current company, and some of the people that come in, they don't actually have a degree in the field that they're applying the job for. And right. So, for example, one of the guys who I think is like one of the best engineers on our team actually has a poli sci degree, which is completely opposite to computer science, but
yeah.
he's, the most well-versed person I know in Python. So yeah, it just goes to show that if you really care about the stuff and you're willing to put in the work, that you can make it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of the people that we hire at my company come from like boot camps and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I find that people that come from a different field first, I mean, it's still school and whatnot, but if somebody's like worked in, say, like, I don't know, doing editing at like at a newspaper or like in like some sort of other field, like bartenders, for instance, even, like, they just kind of bring different levels of experience and different, like, you know, perspectives, I guess, to a team.
Yeah, for sure. Different way of thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, you don't have as much of the, you can imagine, like, if you got a computer science, like a bunch of grads, and, you know, there's going to be different like levels of like, people are going to be discussing different things with a little bit more nuance versus like just kind of constantly talking about code. Or,
yeah, 100%. I agree. It makes the workplace a lot more fun too. So yeah.
Cool. And so, what happened with Food Shooter? I'm curious.
So in Food Shooter, we continued doing it up until 2015. We ran out of funds. We started going around to a bunch of investors and we couldn't secure any funding. And what kind of set the tone for us to shut everything down was there was this one investor that we went to, and we did the pitch and everything. And he was like, you know, you guys don't seem like you guys have your heart in it anymore. And do you guys? And we all looked at each other and we're like, no, we don't. And he's like, so then why are you guys doing this? He's like, I'm saying this for your own good. He's like, there's no point in you guys trying to pursue, trying to get funds.
Yeah.
You know, you're wasting your time. Like, you guys have put in 3 years of your lives into this already, and there's no sense in you trying to continue it even further. At some point you have to learn to say no. Yeah. And I think that was a very pivotal moment for me at that moment in time, to finally let go. 'Cause it was very hard for all of us to let go of it.
Yeah.
But letting go was probably the best decision, because from stopping Food Shooter and turning ourselves into a creative agency, we were able to take on different kinds of projects. So now, instead of, you know, working on one project, which was Food Shooter, we ended up building apps for a bunch of different clients. And that during that time period, that's when I learned the most, because different kinds of problems, right, that you have to solve. And it was a great way of making money for us as well, right? We were making a lot of money, but not enough to the point where, you know, I'd say I'd be able to sustain myself, but, you know, better, like, in comparison to when I was doing the whole startup life, yeah. I was in a much better place. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, there's a big benefit to doing like, creative work for a client.
Yeah.
You get to like experience a lot of different aspects of the different code bases, different stacks.
Mm-hmm.
And then just different products. So you kind of like think from more of like a product focus.
Exactly.
Like in a very high level.
Yeah. And a lot of these clients who did approach us, they didn't have any, you know, product scope whatsoever. So we actually saw the product right from the infancy all the way till launch. We did everything. So all the pre-planning, the UI, UX, you know, where certain features would go, what makes sense and what didn't. So we handled, basically, we built the MVPs of a lot of these products. And one of the products that we actually built was actually bought by another company. So we built something called Token and Gate. It's like an event app, and it was bought by this company called Showcase this year. So I'm pretty proud of that. But yeah, I mean, I think based on all the work that we've done during that period, I'd say that was the time that I learned the most, because of how versatile the different projects were.
Yeah. That's amazing. And like, yeah. How many, so when you were doing this, were you working on like, what kind of backend did you build?
So everything was on Django and Express on using Node.js. And yeah, we did a lot of live functionality as well. So that's where the Node.js component came in.
Right.
But for the most part, everything was in Django. Yeah. And we hosted everything up on AWS. And for our mobile apps, you know, we did native Android and iOS, right? And we did our own UX and UI. Yeah.
Was it just the three of you still, or?
Yeah, it was still the three of us. And we actually brought on another guy to do Android. It's funny. It's like, I think you met him. I think you met him during the time when you joined as well.
What was his name?
Sivam.
Oh, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. So he stuck around with us for a bit, and then he had to leave because, you know, again, when you're an entrepreneur,
yeah,
this is the other thing too. So when you're an entrepreneur, you have to also think about the question of whether or not it's worth it. And the same thing with this whole agency thing that we were doing. We were doing it for 3 years, and then we realized we're not making the money that we need to be making, right? So passion aside, it's great to have passion. It's great to, you know, want to do things outside of the norm. But if it's not giving you the ability to sustain yourself, then you have to realize, okay, this isn't working out for me. What's the next thing that I can do, right? And so with this agency thing, I was doing it for 3 years, and, you know, all the founders, we all realized, look, you know, we're all going to get married soon. You know, we want to have our own families. We want to get our own apartments and all the stuff. We need to start moving out and whatnot. So we realized this wasn't going to work out. And we started to think about other options, right? Mm-hmm. And that's when I just honestly applied to this company that I'm working at right now. And this company is like the best thing that's ever happened in my life. Like I've learned so much here. The team I'm working with is great. And yeah, I don't know. It's just, I never thought that I'd go from being an entrepreneur to working for someone else.
Yeah.
But I feel like this is where I belong. I've done the whole entrepreneur lifestyle, and I'm safe to say that I'm kind of done with it for now. Like I did it, you know, and I was happy that I did it because I learned a lot. And if I didn't do that, then maybe I wouldn't be where I am right now. So
it's like a leaping board in a way. Like it's a stepping stone towards, like, if you want to get into a career, becoming an entrepreneur is kind of like the best way to approach it, because then getting a job in the field ends up being like the worst case scenario.
Exactly.
I felt the same way because I used to freelance, and I was doing it for, you know, I think 3 years straight. And, you know, it turned into like a full-time income, and I was really enjoying it. And I just found at some point that the hustle, like trying to chase down clients and find new clients, and
it's hard, man. It's really hard.
And it's you're responsible for yourself. And, you know, when you get rewarded, it's a big reward. But then you know, the downtimes are just as trying.
Yeah.
And it kind of pushes you to, like, you start to push that on yourself a bit. It's a
It's
a weird treadmill.
Yeah. So, like, even for me, like from 20, so imagine this, like you're talking about the whole downtime, right? Like that whole period that you have, like you have the good times and the bad times. But for me, from 2012 till I'd say about 2019, you know, it was mostly in the down, right? Because that's the whole trap, right? Of being an entrepreneur. You're thinking, okay, I'm almost at the end of the tunnel. Yeah. I can see the light and I'm almost there. Mm-hmm. And you have to tell yourself at a certain point whether or not it's worth it to continue.
Yeah.
Right. You have to have that realization, because if you don't, it's very dangerous, right?
You're
going to start pushing the people that you know closest to you away. You know, everyone who tells you, you know, listen, this isn't working out, you're going to be like, no, you don't know what you're talking about. You know, even people who really care about you, right? They're telling you this for your own good.
Yeah.
You start to push them away. And that's where it gets really dangerous. So I'm glad that I had people around me to, you know, set me straight. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's like a kind of a pervasive culture on like, just online, I found.
Yeah.
It's all about this, like, you know, the hustle no matter what. And like,
oh yeah, dude, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. And it feeds into the same thing, you know, like it kind of, it's like joining a cult.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Except you're in charge.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's exactly how I felt about it. It felt like being in a cult, and you're stuck in this bubble. So no matter what other people say from the outside, you don't realize it until you get out.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm not saying that the entrepreneur lifestyle is bad. I'm just saying that you have to realize when it's time to, you know, just quit and find the next best thing. Right. So yeah, it's, if you surround yourself around the right people, then you can do it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's good that you had like that core group around you, like the two of you started it together, and you stuck with it the entire time through. Because I think, like, so for instance, like when I went into business, I went entirely solo, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up working with some of my friends, but I never had a partner in the business.
Right.
And I think that doing that, it's almost like you kind of feel like you're more accountable, but then you also feel like, you know, your successes are your own. But like at the same time, there is like so much value in having somebody else to bolster you. And every successful entrepreneur that I've talked to, like I talked to my friend Tom on this podcast as well, and he ran his own startup for, I think, like 3, 4, maybe 5 years.
Right.
He was just kind of like, you know, struggling through it too.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it's the same situation where he had a friend or a co-founder that was working with him that was almost like, you know, they didn't have the same personality. They didn't have the same perspective. They kind of bolstered one another. Did you guys have that kind of relationship in a way, or?
Yeah, I mean, all three of us did. I'd say one more than the other. And I think when one of our co-founders left, that's when it kind of set the motions in my head.
Yeah.
And one of our other external friends who wasn't really a part of the company, one day he came over to our office and he said, you know, it's not just you guys anymore. It's you guys and the people around you at home. So your wives or your girlfriends or whatnot, right? And that's when it hit me, because at the time I was married, right? Mm-hmm. I'm still married now, but yeah. so that kind of hit close to home, because I realized he's right, because I can't just think, you know, I'm almost 30. I can't keep doing this, right? I have a wife now and I have to look after her as well, right? And I think that really, you know, put me out of that whole bubble and made me think differently. And
yeah.
So yeah, I have to really give props to that friend and big props to my wife as well for, you know, helping me get out of that zone. Yeah.
I'm surprised. A lot of people glorify I for one, I sometimes look back and I like only think of the positive sides of, you know, my whole like journey.
Yeah.
But there was like definitely some negative parts there that, I mean, obviously I left for a reason, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. It's good to hear that you know, you had good people around you to just like stick through.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I learned a lot during over those years. If that didn't happen, I wouldn't have had the opportunity to do the job that I have now, which I absolutely love. So yeah, I'm thankful for all those years, even though most of it sucked. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's great to hear. And then, so I guess in terms of like, what are you working on now?
So right now I'm on the backend team. And basically the company I work for is called Payfair, and we basically do instant payments for Uber, Lyft, DD and DoorDash drivers. So instead of drivers waiting 2 weeks to get their payments, they right after they finish their ride, they get paid right away. And yeah, so we work, I basically work on the back end with a bunch of other engineers to make that all happen. And yeah, like the team I work with is amazing. That's the one thing that I really love about this company is the people that I work with. Like the group of people that just came together is just perfect combination. So sorry, say that again.
How large is the company?
I'd say it's about 30 to 40 people.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sizable. You guys are pretty established, I take it.
Yeah. I mean, we're getting there, but I'd say we're pretty well established. Yeah.
Cool.
Like we don't really have an engineering culture yet. It's still something that we're trying to make. But that's the interesting part, you know, like, I'm having a lot of fun, and yeah, I mean, it's just, I've learned so much more working at this company than I ever did working by myself, which is kind of strange to say, you know, but yeah, it's because when you're working with others, you can validate, you know, some of the things, some of the doubts that you have or certain ways of doing things. And it's just amazing. I'm so glad that I got this job. I wish I had done this sooner. So yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. That's amazing. Cause, I think that, yeah, like there's a benefit of learning how to like, I guess, push yourself when you're, you know, learning through like doing it on your own. But when you're working with others, you get called on your bullshit a lot quicker.
Oh, 100%. 100%. And yeah, it's just the fact that you can have someone else to learn something new. It's just like, it's one thing to read something off the internet and kind of do it yourself, but to have someone right beside you and be like, hey, how does this work? And then they go through the motions of explaining it. Like it's totally different, man.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And then, so your team, like the backend team there is just you, or no, you said there's a.
Oh, there's four, including me, there's four of us, I believe. Yes, there's four of us. And we have two DevOps guys, and we have a mobile team as well that does both Android and iOS. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So our backend's in Flask and we're hosted up on AWS and yeah. And, you know, when you, again, I know I keep saying a lot about my team, but when you're in a team setting, you end up learning about a lot of new technologies that you never knew existed beforehand.
Yeah. What's some examples? I'd love to hear.
Oh, it's like Kubernetes, like holy smokes. Right.
Are you guys using Kubernetes for your deployments and everything?
Yep. So our DevOps team is doing all of that. And our DevOps team is amazing. Like they do a great job of handling all that. They've built the entire infrastructure. They've built like certain applications, like internal apps for us to even deploy code a lot quicker. So I'd give kudos to those guys. Yeah.
Like Kubernetes and things like that, like definitely are like another level. It's interesting when you get like the need for a DevOps team.
Mm-hmm.
Cause a lot of startups don't really like, you know, you get started, you're doing it yourself, you're like being scrappy. You probably mm-hmm. don't have that mm-hmm. infrastructure, like, you know, a team that's dedicated to infrastructure. And then once you get there, I imagine that there's a lot, like a higher level of sophistication going on, right?
Yeah, 100%.
So how has it changed the way that you, work with your, like as your team work, like with the tools that they've built, that the, you know, is there anything differently that you're doing now that you wouldn't do normally?
So when I was working on my own, I didn't write unit tests at all. Ooh, right.
That's so, a good one.
Yeah. Here, the whole concept of writing unit tests is something that we're trying to ingrain in all the developers. And it's something new because I've never done it before. And I realized the importance of writing unit tests. Yeah. I remember you shared a document a while back. I think it was on LinkedIn talking about the importance of why you should write unit tests and what the consequences are if you don't do them. Right.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I mean, and the best thing is I find like once, like you start off with a code base, you know, you think that it's a lot faster not to write tests, and every developer, right. I think like, you know, we just inherently assume that. Right. But then once you get started, once you have a code base that has like a, you know, a robust set of tests and like mm-hmm. the, you know, the setup that you can, you know, you have an example of how to test individual things.
Right.
You can change, like you can basically like look at your testing patterns and like build utilities and things like that. And then once you can test quickly, you know, like you just notice so many problems so much faster. Like
right.
you make a bug, you know, like you suddenly have a failing test. You can't push to, you know, you shouldn't be able to push broken code. And it's like, how do you know?
And exactly.
So much. Yeah. It's an interesting, it's one of those things. It's like a nice, like, it's like a paradigm shift.
Yeah. So one of the things at our company is that, you know, when you have really good unit tests and you're building out a new feature, mm-hmm. You can be confident that your thing won't break because the unit tests are written really well. And that's the importance of it, right? The level of confidence you have in the features that you're building. And when you're when your unit tests are good, and you can be confident that the feature you're building isn't going to break in production.
Yeah.
So that's why I think you should put a big emphasis on writing unit tests. Mm-hmm. And, you know, something that I think we will be doing soon is doing test-driven development. So writing the unit tests first mm-hmm. and then writing the code for it. The thing is, we move so fast. Like, we're such a small team, like tech-wise. Like, we're about like small to medium size, but you know, we're working on so many features at the same time. Like, you know,
how do you manage it? Are you using like Jira or?
Yeah, we use Jira to manage everything. So our product team's really great. You know, they scope out all the features and create tickets in Jira, and then we just take on the tickets and start working on them. And our DevOps team has made it so easy so that when we create a branch, it's linked to the Jira ticket. So mm-hmm. as we push code, you can see the updates in Jira. So that's really great. So the product team can see our progress and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I guess once you get like once you get everything set up into like a nice groove, like automation changes everything, right? Like
100%.
You see all your stuff. The best is like if you know, make a PR. That's why I love like some tools, like simple tools like Netlify.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm working on like personal sites and so and whatnot, like the fact that you can spin up like a new environment per pull request, and you can do the same in like if you're using something like Jenkins X now,
mm-hmm.
It's actually apparently it's pretty easy to set up. It just spins up a new cluster in your Kubernetes and it just works.
Mm-hmm.
But like if you can set that up, it changes a lot because you know you can have people come in and test your feature and you don't have to be running it locally or doing some weird hack just to get somebody else to be able to give you some feedback, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I guess, what else we can talk about? I don't know. Is there anything else that's like really interesting you to you right now in terms of like just new technologies or different like ways of building software?
Yeah. So for me, I think Docker has completely changed the game. I feel like before the way I used to deploy code was I'd have a virtual environment on EC2. And then I'd use a library called Python Fabric. And what that would do is basically SSH into that EC2 instance and download all the dependencies and then do a git pull from GitHub and then spin up the server and do all that stuff, right?
Okay, so you scripted it out still. Like you weren't manually SSHing in.
No, when I first started, I was doing that and that turned out to be a pain. And then I used the script and that changed. That was a game changer. But, you know, Docker has really changed the game in the sense that you don't really necessarily need to care about the underlying platform that you're running your code on, mm-hmm. right? And The way we do, the way we ship code is all through Docker, right? So we push our code onto Docker images, and that's how they get built, and that's how they get deployed through Kubernetes and stuff. So I feel like that's really a game changer. And something that I'm trying to learn right now is Kubernetes. I really want to, you know, get the hang of it. I just want to understand how it works. Mm-hmm. And I've also started digging into Vue.js, you know, front-end frameworks and stuff. I wanted to learn React, but, you know, I feel like, you know, because we use Vue.js at work, I feel like that would be a lot more useful.
Probably better to learn your own stack. I mean, like, I've actually, I haven't touched Vue yet, but I've heard it's like a kind of a nice hybrid between like lightweight, like React, but a little bit more robust with like more opinions, like Angular is the way I've heard it described. Mm-hmm. It sounds interesting for sure.
So you've done more so front end kind of work, right? Like that's where you're.
Yeah, I've kind of bounced around. I've always been full stack. So like since I went out on my own, you know, I built like, I started with Angular and Node.js and Express. And then I moved into like, okay, now I'm freelancing. I did a React application with a lightweight Express backend. And then I built full on like, you know, real time streaming app, and like also in the process did like a website, like, you know, React app, and then also a React native app.
Mm-hmm.
And then since I started working full time, it's kind of like bounced around almost every project. Like my last project was rebuilding like a pretty large site, like I can't name the name, but it's like a large client,
right,
like something you would use. And it was just a web application, and we were basically building out a design system for them, and then also building their React site. And then I was integrating all of the backend, because they've got all these different tools, they've got all these different APIs, you know, pretty large site. So it was like a huge team, huge effort. And then now I'm working on an entirely backend application with Kubernetes.
Nice.
Which is kind of cool. Get to kind of explore. They've got an interesting setup where they've, rather than writing raw, actually, that'd be interesting. How do you manage your kube config files? Do you know how they do that?
Oh, I have no idea. I think they do it through Terraform or something like that. Like,
cool. Yeah.
I think that's what they're using, which is good because then they can track their changes easily, right? So yeah, like again, I know nothing to the scale that these guys do, but they've got it pretty well handled. So, but from what I know, I'm pretty sure they do use Terraform to make those kind of changes.
I think my understanding is like, you still end up needing a kubeconfig of some sort, but you can use Terraform to spin up the infrastructure.
Right.
I haven't used Terraform directly myself. I've had it in a code base. Like last year, this is the fun part I think about consulting, right? And this is why I ended up going in going to a company versus continuing to work on my own is like, you just end up working on such different scale of things. Like just last year I was working on like, you know, a banking application. But then right after that, I went in with this startup that's like in the travel space, and they wanted to like rebuild their entire platform. So we got to do DevOps for them. And then, also like training/working alongside their DevOps manager who they just hired. And it was a really interesting experience because we kind of, you know, you got to touch Kubernetes, but you weren't directly responsible for like all of the setup. We were more like building the pipelines and the the application. But it's cool. Like it's a neat technology because like you can script out, like it's neat that you can write out a description of your entire system and it just works.
Yeah.
And somebody who understands that can come into a new project, like look through those configurations and see, okay, this points to this service accesses this database, this service is like, you know, there's these different versions of it. The system that I'm working on now is really interesting because, you know, we can go into the Kubernetes and see the system, but not actually have access to, like if you had access to PCF or something like that, you'd have to figure out, like, you have like all of your keys, you have to reason about how it works. But in this, you can just, you know, there's even like a VS Code plugin, you connect to your cluster, you can then look at every individual service that's ever been deployed. You can look at all of the deployments that are there, and you can see which services spin up on which nodes, and you can see what they connect to, but you can't see the secrets or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Secrets are held by some service, and it's And the way that like the cloud providers are doing it now, like GCP is next level, but AWS, you can integrate with like all of their services.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I really love those sorts of technologies because it makes everything so much more understandable.
Exactly.
There's no guesswork, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, just on the topic of AWS and just DevOps in general, I feel like DevOps is an entirely different beast.
Yeah.
You know, for a lot of devs, you know, that are interested in doing DevOps, they, you have to really want to do DevOps because it can be a headache sometimes, right? Like a lot of times when something goes down, they're the first guys that react, right? They're the first guys to know about it, right? So, yeah, you need to be very well versed in this kind of stuff.
There's a lot of beepers and or what's that app for everyone that
PagerDuty
like that's the one thing that's pushing me from like I would never know I don't know if I'd want to do DevOps full time. I love the systems and I love the way it works, but I don't want to be on PagerDuty. Mm-hmm. My girlfriend got woken up at like I think it was like 5 a.m. one time.
Mm-hmm.
with a pager reaction because like some other team broke some service and I was just like I couldn't imagine that. Like, and it wasn't even an issue she could fix. It had nothing to do with her. It's just she's on duty, so they have to buzz her.
And, yeah, like, like if you decide to go into it, you have to have the mindset for it. Like, that's the only way you're going to survive. Yeah, like, and again, I keep saying this, but I think we have like one of the best DevOps teams like in the world. These guys are amazing. So yeah, kudos to them because whenever something goes down, they're always on it right away. They're writing RCAs and all this stuff. They're on top of everything. So yeah.
That's great. I mean, like it's, so how did you, like, were you there before the DevOps group or, like how early on were you?
So I started in May of last year and everything was, the infrastructure's already there. Everything was pretty much done. I just kind of came in and had to learn the stack, kind of inherited, you know, the infrastructure that they had built. And again, for my duties at the company, I was only responsible for just writing code. So I didn't have to worry about the infrastructure aspect of it, which was really nice, you know, because before when I was working on my own, I had to worry about spinning up the EC2 servers, worry about the database, worry about how to make all the pieces work and whatnot. But that's kind of like a burden that's taken off of me and the team because now we have a dedicated DevOps team that handles all that stuff for you, right? And, you know, I got curious. I'm like, okay, so what is DevOps, right? And if you think about it, DevOps is really about making the lives of developers easy, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not just that, but I feel like a large part of what they do is give us the ability to ship code faster, to not worry about the infrastructure pieces and just focus on, you know, building features, which is great.
And like the interesting stuff, some stuff that even plays into there, I don't know if every company does it this way, but like, for instance, when we were working on like just setting up like a DevOps system for a team, the DevOps mm-hmm. manager was actually going as far as like, his idea was like migrations, like versioning, everything should be controlled by the system. Like the dev shouldn't have to think about it. They just do what they're doing. And then as long as they, you know, follow the release cycle or like mm-hmm. they were doing a hybrid of like Git flow and, mm-hmm. you know, some different, I would call it like less structured, but
mm-hmm.
you know, it worked in the way that they wanted it to. And so whenever they make a release, he kind of like controlled that and he made it easier for them.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's cool because you're building out internal, like I've never worked at like a large, like I would say that's a mid-sized large startup. Like mm-hmm. I've worked more like alongside there aren't enterprises where they've got all these layers of systems or like startup clients through like at pretty earlier stage.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to see like kind of when you get to the point where you have like your own internal tools that you build.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's it's interesting because you kind of deviate from like what's kind of like the public favorite versus like what's your favorite.
You know? Right. And the thing is when you start building your tools, you're fine tuning it to what you need, which is good. That I think it's amazing, right? And if people like usually a lot of these tools that are open source were originally internal tools that served a bigger purpose, right? Yeah. So
Kubernetes was just, you know, originally Borg, which was just like Google's way of deploying containers.
Right, exactly.
They just wanted a way to manage containers in a way that makes sense. And then they ended up building all this extra tooling around it. Mm-hmm. Then I guess at some point they were like, oh shit, maybe someone else could use this.
Exactly, right? Yeah, I mean, the other thing too is with the field that we're in, there's so many new technologies and it's always going to keep changing. The landscape's going to keep changing all the time. And sometimes you might feel like it's a rabbit hole, right? So for example, like because I'm learning Kubernetes, I was like, okay, Kubernetes is cool. All right. It uses Docker to deploy the containers, right? And whatnot. So, okay. So how does Docker work? So you look at how Docker works and then you're like, okay, Docker communicates with the kernel. Great. Okay. So how does the kernel work? Okay. So the kernel, you know, acts as the intermediate between the hardware and the OS. Okay, great. How does the hardware work? So you go down this rabbit hole of continually trying to figure out how everything works, right? And then eventually you get down to the atomic scale of how electricity works or how atoms work, right? So I think it's important for developers to kind of just not go down that rabbit hole of trying to figure out how things work under the hood. Mm-hmm. Just know enough to get you by, and then over time you will begin to understand how things work under the hood.
So I almost think about it as the opposite in a sense. Like I kind of disagree with that in the mm-hmm. sense that, so I think there's two ways that people learn in programming. Mm-hmm. Right? And because it's always changing, there's the breadth first, which mm-hmm. people kind of just learn everything and anything and everything that comes out that's new. And right. you know, you don't go deep, which, you know, there's benefits to that. It's easier to keep up. And, you know, if you want to like be popular on Twitter mm-hmm. or YouTube or whatever, I think that's probably, you know, the best way to kind of gain that. Mm-hmm. But then there's also the fact that if you want to like really grow in a certain area. So for instance, if you're working with Flask and you want to, you know, really build out the performance of that, or if you're, for me, it's JavaScript, I'm typically working with Node. Mm-hmm. You kind of have to like dig into the nuance, right? So like, mm-hmm. at some point you got to figure out like, okay, so if you're working with Node.js, you don't want to block the cycle, but then which actions that you use potentially block, and then how does asynchronous behavior work? Like, I think mm-hmm. some of those things are like really useful, especially as you grow in your career.
Right.
I think you're right. Like that those things typically, you don't necessarily need to know all of it to get started.
Right.
But you're going to have to, or you don't have to, but it's beneficial to learn that stuff as you go. I think the biggest thing people like screw up is they just don't get started. And they know everything before they can even do anything, which.
So I'll tell you an interesting story. I went to PyCon 2 years ago and it was PyCon Canada actually. And there was this lady who came in to talk about Django, right? And what's interesting about her is that she, like when you think about frameworks, like front-end frameworks or back-end frameworks, mm-hmm. like, the purpose of what they serve is to make development easier, right? Right. So you don't necessarily need to understand how Python works, but as long as you understand how the framework works, you can build whatever it is you need to build. Right. And this lady who came in, she's like, you know, I still to this day, I don't know how to write classes. Still to this day, I don't know how to write, you know, ternary operations, but I can build a website for you if you ask me to build one. Right. And I think that's the most key takeaway is that as long as you can, like, for example, in the corporate world, if someone were to come to you and say, hey, build this feature. They're not going to care about, you know, the underlying technology as to how you built it. As long as you deliver, I think that's what matters.
Right. Yeah. I do agree with that. Yeah.
So I thought that was an interesting point.
Yeah, it is interesting. Like it's definitely true. Cause like if you wait until like, cause there's like a huge issue, I think, with imposter syndrome with a lot of people.
100%. It's huge. I have it all the time.
Yeah. And it's at some point it's like, you know, it's kind of just a fear of being wrong. Like you don't want to be proven wrong or you don't want to do something wrong.
Right.
And it's like, I think there's a lot of merit in like just getting started.
I think, you know, just on the topic of imposter syndrome, I think developers face imposter syndrome more than any other group of people. I just feel like it's so common because again, I mean, I'd say, a lot of developers are just like me. They don't have accreditation to back them up, right? And that kind of messes you up sometimes, right? You don't know if the thing you're doing is the right way. And you don't know if you really are a good developer or not, right?
Right.
But what kind of helped me out with that is when I started working in a team setting, mm-hmm. it kind of validated the things that I was doing all along. So that really helped. When you work with others, it really helps with the imposter syndrome, because you have other developers who can tell you, look, no, you're doing things the right way. You're doing things properly. It really helps. Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah. It's like, I guess it's kind of like being able to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
Cause, I know like a lot of people will still work in a team setting. Mm-hmm. I think that's where, imposter syndrome can kind of be the most dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Is when, you know, if you're with a team and, you know, I guess like, let's say you're the only person on the team that went through a boot camp or was self-taught, right. That can definitely be a source of it. But a lot of the time it's also even just like, I don't know, like people who come from say a Google or a Facebook or whatever internship or job mm-hmm. typically have like a bit of authority behind their everything that they say.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And if you look at like, at least nowadays, even like since everyone's kind of working remote, there's a lot more need for like social validation online.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And what I found for myself, I've actually tried to avoid using Twitter as much as I go into, I go onto Twitter and I'm looking at all these people who seem to have like such seasoned careers and they've only been working for like 2 years or a year and everyone just trusts them. They have thousands of followers. Everything they say sounds really, you know,
yeah, really, I mean, whatever. It's funny you mentioned that because
yeah.
I've been following a couple of these guys on YouTube, and I personally think that, you know, some of these guys who just started getting into software development mm-hmm. have found, you know, a circuit formula, you know, to, you know, make themselves seem more authentic than they actually are, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of YouTubers, like, you know, I don't have to name them, but there's a few of them out there that I think that are sellouts, right? What's that? Yeah, dude, he's... Tech lead for me, in my opinion, he's the biggest sellout on the planet. Like,
man, so okay, what do you mean by sellout? I love the guy. I find him hilarious. He has my my dry sense of humor, I think, or he could be completely serious. I have no idea. That's the brilliant part. Like
dude, the day that he got fired from Facebook, right? Like literally in that video, he's like, by the way, here's my sponsor, right?
Oh yeah.
Like at that point, I realized that guy was, you know, a sellout, right? And I feel like you have to be careful about where you get your information from.
Right.
You know, make sure that you get your information from credible sources, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying the people on the information on YouTube is bad, but just make sure you get it from more than one source. That's very important, right? And again, not all of Tech Lead's videos are like that. There's a few videos where I think that, okay, he's not really being honest. Like for example, he released a video about React saying how it's a garbage framework. But I felt like it was biased because he was fired from Facebook, and that's Facebook's framework, right? So
in the video too, he also kind of he talks about React Native being like there's a different video where he's like React Native sucks or whatever.
And right, right.
You know, he presents the merits of it. He's like, if you're trying not to build to scale, you need to launch quickly. This would be great. And like I like React Native. I use React Native at work. I absolutely agree with that point. I don't think it's like. There's a reason that Airbnb, for instance, dropped support for React Native, right? It's it's not always as scalable. But then for something like Shopify, where most of your traffic is websites anyways, the mobile app can be, it's just a backend, right? It's not the whole app. So I think that's kind of like, he makes some valid points, but I do think he is intentionally controversial, which I don't like, but I find sometimes... But there is a lot of that, like people trying to stir up kind of like drama around themselves and
yeah. Like even that that guy who's doing the machine learning stuff, I forgot his name, like where he was like copying people's repos and not crediting them, right?
Oh yeah, like he literally just pulled open source and he had a YouTube channel where he just basically did a walkthrough of open source code.
Yeah. And I feel like people nowadays need to be very careful because now I feel like software development is in the spotlight. It's like the in thing now. So this stuff, we're going to see it more and more on YouTube. It's going to pop up everywhere, right? So when you are getting information, just make sure you get it from more than one source. And again,
I like
watching Tech Lead. I like his videos. They're entertaining. But in terms of me trying to get, you know, for me to say that's a valid source of information, I would say no. I'd say find multiple sources and then make your own conclusions, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, and like I even think there's a so for instance, like one of the ways that a lot of people are getting into web development and or like into development in general, rather, like app development, whatever, mm-hmm. Is through these boot camps.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that there's like if you've heard of Lambda School.
Yeah, yeah.
I've heard a lot of like, I guess, bad like press about them, I guess. And like mm-hmm. what I've noticed is a lot of these things, like, I don't know, there's like the limelight, things are getting out exposed, and then there's people trying to profiteer off of it. And then sometimes it yeah. works, sometimes it doesn't, but then other times like they just kind of, you know, it's people, you might get value out of it, but it's, you still have to learn on your own no matter what, I find. Like, you're not going to get the answers from someone else.
So the one thing is, yeah, you can do these boot camps and you will probably learn a lot, but if you're not taking that knowledge and building something with it, if you're not working on your own project or you're not using it for some sort of job, you're yeah. going to forget about all that stuff. Because again, these boot camps, they're quick. It's like usually a 1 week or 2 week time span. And yeah. there's so much information that they cram, right? So
some of them are like full on school.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually what, like this Lambda School thing is, it's, I think it's like 6 months or something like that,
mm-hmm.
or 3 months, which is still a very short time to learn how to code.
Yeah.
And then they take 30% of your salary if you make over 50,000.
But you see, that's where it kind of gets weird, because you have to think, okay, is the stuff you're learning really the stuff that's in right now, or yeah. are they just teaching you, here, this is how you do HTML5 and CSS, and here's jQuery, and that's it?
Yeah, I think that most of the schools are teaching the useful stuff. I've talked to some bootcamp grads. I wouldn't want to name names, but that they've kind of gotten maybe not the greatest experience. They did learn like, oh, intro to web development, and you learn HTML, CSS, and you realize that nobody's, very few people are still writing like raw HTML, CSS. I think
right.
it's very useful for a designer to learn HTML, CSS, because they
100%.
Can write markups very quickly.
Yeah. And you know, it's still useful to know that stuff. Like yeah. even if you're working with a framework like Vue.js or Angular or whatnot, like you'll still have to write CSS. So,
of course, yeah. I mean, but there is, yeah, a lot of these schools, like we've hired a lot of bootcamp grads, mm-hmm. and some of them are our best developers. Like a lot of them actually cover teaching or testing. Like a lot mm-hmm. of them cover like, you know, modern frameworks. You just got to find the right one. But yeah, right. like I think even there, it's like people kind of need a guiding source or some way of like a bullshit detector, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like it's obvious when you see all these Amazon FBA ads on YouTube or whatever, that like this random British kid probably does not know how to make $1 million in 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
But he can say he can, right? But with development, I don't know. There's a lot more technical jargon that you can throw out.
Right. Yeah, I mean, but like you were saying earlier, I mean, there's a bunch of videos on YouTube where, you know, people are putting out you know software tutorial or just tutorials on certain frameworks and whatnot, and you could tell, you know, from someone who's a much more sound developer who's been around in the game for quite some time, that this person just literally learned how to do the stuff the day before and just put out this video really quickly, right? And they're not, you have to understand like the motive behind some of these people on YouTube. They're not there to you know, really teach you the stuff. At the end, they're there to make money, right? And the fastest way possible. They're there to maximize their views. So they're going to use the right keywords. They're going to use, you know, the title that's the most catchiest to get your attention, right? Mm-hmm. So in my opinion, those videos are great if you want to just get your feet wet. But if you really want to learn stuff, download a book or read one of those books on the actual frameworks or the technologies that you want to learn.
Yeah. And do you have any foundational books that you would recommend?
So one book that I just started recently is Intro to Software Development. It's because, you know, from you, most engineers don't really know how operating systems work, right? Because most of them are focused on writing code, right? And yeah. which is fair. Like you shouldn't have to get that far to understand how an operating system works, because the operating system at the end of the day is just a platform that you write the code on, right? Mm-hmm. But it really helps to understand how your code is interpreted or how it's compiled, how it's running, and what goes on under the hood. It makes you a much more well-seasoned developer. So mm-hmm. that's another book that I'm reading. And just aside from reading software development books, I'm reading this book by Jordan Peterson. It's called, I think
Color's
it's called
Life, or
yes, that's the one. Yeah,
oh, I love it. It's good. He's controversial as hell, but
yeah,
I do love his writing.
Yeah. And, you know, it's, I think it's important to, as a developer to also take breaks and do other stuff, you know, watch shows, you know, watch, read different kinds of books. Not everything you do has to be about software development.
I've actually kind of gotten, I go through phases of that where, you know, I'll get really into something and I'll just dig in.
Mm-hmm.
Say Kubernetes, for instance, trying to figure out the entire infrastructure and all of that. And like, I think at some point, you know, it's good to have that path, like that focus. But once it runs out, it's kind of gone and people start beating themselves up about it.
Right.
And like having something else that you like. So for me, I just recently started running. Like, it's just something to disconnect, something to kind of get away from it.
Yeah.
You got to have something else for sure. Like,
yeah. And when you do those other things, it kind of, well, let's say you're working on a project for 2 weeks and you're stuck on a certain problem, you don't know how to solve it. When you go and do other things, it gives your time, gives your brain a time to reset, you know? And then when you approach the problem again, it's, you'll have a lot more, better time. An easier time to solve that issue, I guess.
Do you have any hobbies that you get out and do to kind of get on the line from it?
Right now, I love my Nintendo Switch. It's I just got it about like 4 months ago, and I've been playing Mario Kart. It helps me, you know, just calms me down. You know,
considered Harvest Moon.
Sorry, say that again.
Have you considered Harvest Moon?
No, I haven't.
I've heard people Harvest Moon, or people have been like going on about. You're basically like fishing, mowing the lawn. It's like real life simulator, but people are doing it because they're forced inside. So it's just like, man, imagine you had a normal life right now.
Yeah. This whole virus has kind of changed the way people work.
Yeah.
It's kind of also given validation for remote work, which I'm pretty happy about. Like, that's really good. Cause now, you know, companies are now starting to understand, hey, you know, there's no need for people to come into the office all the time. People can do a lot of this stuff from home as long as they have an internet connection.
Right? And I think it's also like, even just now, it's a great opportunity for people who are interested in different companies, but just didn't have access because of like geographical issues.
Right. Right.
Like the opportunity is now blown up where, you know, if you wanted to work for some startup, but they're in Vancouver and you've been in Toronto your entire life and you don't want to move, you know, you can trial it if you start working with them remotely. Like, and you could even bootstrap freelance careers. Like, all sorts of opportunities are kind of opening up.
Yeah. And, you know, it's strange because 3 years ago or 2 years ago, you wouldn't have seen this happen. But like, if you, for example, like Stripe, right? And I've seen this quite often. Like, if you go to their careers page, almost all of it is like remote work.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is nuts.
They've got a few satellite offices or something and they got an office, but it's mostly like all engineering is remote, I think.
Yeah. And that's nuts. You would have not seen that 2 years ago or 3 years ago. Yeah. Right. So I'm glad the landscape is changing. And you know, at times, you know, for me personally at my company, like we have the option of working from home, and sometimes, yeah, you do want to come in the office. You do want to see other faces because it does kind of get tiring working from home nonstop. Mm-hmm. Right. You want to have other human contacts. So
yeah,
we have the option of doing both, which is fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Like I've missed the office because like I used to kind of thrive off of people just poking me on the shoulder and asking me a question.
Right. Right.
Like being able to contribute to other people's projects that way.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's kind of, you know, I'm hunkered down. I have to reach out to them. So I'm just trying to get used to it. I've definitely found like there's a bump in productivity though. Like I'm able to accomplish a lot more, like, and I'm also still able to go out running now, whereas before I would have probably worked until like I would stay in the office till like 6 or 7 or 8,
right,
and then go home and, you know, not feel up for that sort of thing. Maybe I'd go to the gym, but now it's kind of necessity.
Yeah.
And I think it's good in a way. I think there's a lot of problems with it that we need to solve, and I feel bad for anyone who's in like a studio apartment and trying to work out of their bedroom. Cause that's, to me, I think that would be much more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think remote work is definitely going to change like work, the way work happens.
Yeah.
These next, like, I think it's, I'm still looking at it, like, who knows, maybe 2, 3, 4 months minimum. Like, that's optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a lot of changes. And, like, I think, I don't know, there's opportunity there. There's also risk. And I feel bad for people who, like, I feel very, very grateful that I'm in this industry. Because if I wasn't, I'm sure that my life would be significantly harder right now. Than
100%. 100%. I, like, honestly, I feel very lucky to be a part of this industry. Like you said, like I feel like we're riding the high wave right now of it, right? Like we just got in at the perfect time to, you know, to capitalize the most on it. So I'm very glad that we're living in this time right now to experience this. But yeah, I just hope, I don't know how long it's going to last, to be honest, you know? So yeah, man. But yeah, like just even on that topic of working from home, that's also another thing for you to consider when you're applying to jobs. You can tell whether or not a company cares about its employees based on, you know, whether they have work from home policies or the perks that they have, or, you know, the kind of things, the kind of incentives they do for self-learning or for you to move up in the company, right? You know, so some companies, what they do is they actually have some sort of budget or a fund for you to take a course or something so that you can move up. And when you think about it from that perspective, companies are doing that to make you happy, but also it helps the company in the long run as well. Cause now they've invested into their own team. Right.
And yeah, it brings up the level. It makes them, if like for certain teams, it makes them seem more credible. Well, it makes them more credible.
Right.
Industry. Like for me, my last job, I came from a company that was huge on that. Tribal Scale used to invest, like, I think it was $1,000 a year you could just put onto any program. And it was like $500 or something like that. And then, you know, $1,000 if you went to a conference, you could go to one conference at your 1 year or something like that, paid on for the company up to $1,000. It was very, I never took advantage of that, but I did, get a, like the Google, like did like one of these Google certs or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was super useful. I got a cool backpack out of it.
Nice.
But yeah, like I think those sorts of opportunities are great because you, not only do you get, so like as a result, you know, we actually had a partnership with GCP.
Mm-hmm.
It helped a lot with like finding clients and whatnot. But it also helps, you know, with career and just, I think it's like a focused way to, because it's, these courses are prohibitively expensive for individuals, but they're not expensive at all for
a team.
For a team, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
My current company, we're trying to get into more like just build out our recognition for like different platforms we work with.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people have been doing certifications in like, you know, specific things like Contentful and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
To make us like a partner with them, and I think it's good that teams invest in their employees. Like it's my thought is if a place is a good place to learn, you're not going to attract, like it's not, you don't have to attract the best engineers in the world because you can create the best engineers in the world.
100%. I agree with that 100%. Yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah.
Culture is just, it's amazing. Cause like, if you can, you know, tap anyone on the shoulder and kind of pick their brain about a topic or learn, that's kind of why I started this podcast, is like, it's just such a fun way to like talk to people who have got completely different, you know, directions throughout their careers and just how they think. And it's, being able to learn from other people is just like one of the best things you can do.
Yeah. 100%.
Cool. We're actually up, I think, over an hour now. Did you have anything else that you wanted to like chat about for the last, like, for say 5 minutes or? Anything you want to like shamelessly plug? Do you have anything?
No, I don't have anything to plug. I mean, I just wanted to do this because it was interesting. I just, like how you wanted to pick, you know, people's brains, I wanted to do the same thing. So
yeah, no, I appreciate you coming on.
I mean, that's pretty much it. I don't know what else to talk about. I mean,
What we already covered books. What would you, what's your one thing that you would recommend to say like an engineer who's either like someone who's just getting started in engineering, like computer science, computer programming, or is like in their first or second job, like intermediate, like, you know, like that junior kind of level, and they really want to like level up. Like, what was your number one tip?
I'd say my number one tip is to believe in yourself more than you do. And I mean, I think that's the biggest thing, because a lot of juniors who do start out, they have, again, the whole imposter syndrome, right? You should be confident in your abilities, and also validate them with the people that you work around with. I think that's the most important thing. The people who you surround yourself with in your team, mm-hmm. Based on that, you can propel yourself forward, right? Again, like I always keep bringing this back to my team, because again, I've never been more happier than to work with these group of people that I work with right now, but I've learned so much from these group of people, mm-hmm. and that what I've learned is so valuable, right? And before I even started, like, I was nowhere near at the level that I am now, right? And a lot of that has to do with, you know, your willingness to learn, your willingness to ask questions. Like, there's no such thing as a stupid question. There's no such thing as a stupid question. So if you don't know something, just ask, you know, ask the developers around you, hey, how does this work? You know, because when you do that, that's like, once you know something, then you can transfer that knowledge to someone else. Right. So it's, and when teams do share knowledge like that, it helps the team as a whole. It helps the company as a whole. It helps everybody, because now we can all ship code faster. We can write features quicker, right? Mm-hmm. We're all on the same page. So, that's my advice, just to believe in yourself more than you do, I guess.
Believe in yourself and ask questions.
Yeah. 100%.
All right. Thanks a lot, man.
Yeah, no worries.
I'm going to